back to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I'm joined again with Suzanne Ross, who is the founder and producer of the Sedona Ascension Retreats. And we're joined by one of my favorite people, one of my very special guests and speaker, Neith Morjani, who's going to be appearing in Sedona, March 8th to the 10th. Suzanne, do you have anything to say about that conference?
Absolutely. You're all invited. I feel really compelled to offer the Sedona Ascension Retreats annually in Sedona and now at the magnificent Sedona Performing Arts Center. It's my calling to gather together like-minded souls in the beautiful, magnificent Red Rock Paradise of Sedona, so that together we can really raise the collective consciousness. And that's why I choose global thought leaders that are soul-inspired and heart-centered, like Anita Morjani and many of these other world-renowned spiritual teachers and international best-selling authors. The messages they bring are elevating, inspiring, and empowering. And I invite you all to join us March 8th through 10th in 2024.
It's going to be fantastic. Anita, thanks for joining me today and coming in March. And your message at this time about the kind of transcendent realities that are possible and how to live our lives here, I think it's more important than ever. I mean, the world is at war. I don't want to go too much into the political, but what do you say about these people really suffering? And, you know, how, I mean, I don't know what to say about what do you feel about what's going on the planet?
Well, so I'm really sad, of course, about what's going on. Well, first of all, thank you for the introduction. Thank you for everything. I'm really delighted to be here and speaking to you both. The war and these kinds of things really, really sadden me, and they surprise me and they shock me, because I would have hoped that we as a race, the human race, would have evolved beyond having to do things like that by now. I think that it's really, really setting back consciousness when we see this kind of thing, and when we see the way it escalates, where each side has to outdo the other side. There is no good that can come out of it. You know, the way these games are played, where each side feels they have to be more powerful and more violent in order to control the other side. No matter what you use to justify violence, it's still violence. It's not going to improve the situation. No matter what the opposing side has done, it's still violence. It really does take at least one person to just say, enough, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to take it further. But, or one side to say that. So it saddens me that this is still
going on. Is there a solution from your perspective, which is, you know, I would say interdimensional or a higher because you have that and that stays with you because of your amazing near-death experience. Is there a solution to people's, tell us.
So there is a solution, and the solution doesn't come from outside action as much as from the inner action and causing a ripple effect outside. So for example, if we were all as individuals, if we decided, every single one of us, if we decided we wanted peace, and if we sent peaceful thoughts, if we sent love, if we sent kindness, and if we practiced peace and we practiced kindness, we could actually send a ripple effect outward. What we tend to do is that we tend to react outwardly. We tend to fight against what we don't want. And what we don't often realize is that fighting against what we don't want actually creates more of what we don't want. But if we start to live what we do want and we touch the people around us, it actually starts this ripple effect. So what I want to say from a consciousness perspective is that what happens with each of us as individuals is when we see things happening in the outside world, it it angers us. And so then we respond to that anger with more anger. But if we responded with love and with kindness, you know, we responded from the space of consciousness with love and kindness, we could change the world, but it needs more people to respond that way. So we need to show people, teach people, demonstrate it, be it, and see it working. Because one of the common things that happens, and this is from my perspective, I'm no expert on wars or politics or the news or any of that. But because of my experience on the other side, I know how consciousness works. I know how my consciousness shifted when I was on the other side. My consciousness shifted to the point where it caused a physical reaction in my body that defied anything that could have happened to me physically if they approached it from the physical. In other words, when you approach something from the consciousness, it magnifies it. It happens so much more effectively and faster than if you approach something from the physical. So basically, if we see something that angers us and we then react to it from the inside, from the conscious level, oh, I don't like this. This is making me angry. I don't like what's happening in the world. What do I want to see in the world? So I actually then start to work at it from the consciousness level. Let's spread more love. Let's spread more light. Let's spread more peace. Let's spread more kindness. Then we start to touch other people who do the same. So here's what actually sets it back. What sets it back is when people see this, and this happens to me all the time, is when people see me doing what I do. And what they do is instead they kind of attack me and they say, there's people dying, there's people, there's wars happening, and all you can do is spread love and joy. You're so delusional. You're living in a dream world. You're living in a bubble. What they don't realize is that energy that they're holding and spreading, that fear that they're spreading, that anger they're spreading, is actually spreading more of what we don't want. But I get where they're coming from. I get it. It's the, it does kind of ignite an anger or a fear in you. But unfortunately, that is actually fueling the fire of the planet as opposed to quelling it. I hope that made sense.
No, that does. But the one thing I think people have to realize or do is forgiveness. Even though there's awful things happening, how do people find in themselves the ability to forgive such horrible things that have happened, you know?
So in a way, I'm going to say that it's not for us to forgive or not forgive. That's something that happens at the consciousness level. We should not be taking on the burden on a human level, because that's what depletes people. Really, if we can just do our part to just help, to spread peace, to help those who are in pain, to help those who are in fear, to help alleviate the fear. One of the things that I don't like is how much fear gets spread, not just about the wars, you know, like why do we have wars? It's because we see people as being separate from us or see people as being enemies. Now, I want you to think about this. Is the war actually between the people of the countries? No, it isn't. It's between a handful of politicians.
Yeah.
And if the people could have their way, you ask anybody in any country, anywhere, nobody wants war. They just want to get on with their lives. So who is making these decisions? These are the few handful of people that we have put into power. We have voted them into power. We have to stop doing that. We as a people have to start coming together. And it's getting easier and easier to do that today with technology and with social media. Yeah. We have, as a people, have to stop spreading the hatred. We have to see through it. The other thing that I saw in my near-death experience when I was on the other side is I saw through the I'm going to say illusion. Some people don't like it being called an illusion because this world feels very real, very mm-hmm. painful, and very fearful for many. And I honor that, and I want to respect that. But when you're on the other side, when you lose your body, you actually see through all of that, and you see that I had fallen into believing certain people, certain factions, certain cultural beliefs, certain religious beliefs, certain mm-hmm. medical beliefs. All of that is the illusion. It's what we buy into. It's what we believe. It's who we believe. And right. all of these voices, the loudest voices among us in our human race, the loudest voices seem to be spreading fear. Mm-hmm. And that's what I saw through. I saw through the fear that was being spread by the people in power. And I decided that I'm not going to buy into those voices anymore because I've seen through it. I've seen the truth. I've seen that we're not meant to be living in fear. And it is with that fear that we are able to be manipulated into going into war or into seeing other people as an enemy or into believing that we are just a victim of our illnesses and so on and on. It's because we buy into the fear and we will then do anything to try and get out of the fear. And so we become very easy to manipulate. But as soon as you see through it, then that's what sets you free.
Well, that's our conditioning since birth. Like you are this and you live here and this is who you are. And you identify with false things that make you think things are real. Like John Lennon said, imagine no religion, imagine no countries. That's the world I think is possible, you know?
And yeah,
we're hopefully, because I think the internet, you're right, and the conferences Suzanne is doing and TCCHE is bringing together this global awareness that consciousness, people, spirit is a thing, and there's no religion and country that owns that. So.
Exactly. That's how it is on the other side. You know, there is no religion. People fight over religion here, claiming that their religion is what we're going to experience when we cross over.
Right.
And some people don't like it when I say this, but none of that is true. None of it. There is no religion on the other side.
Well, that's why your message is so important, because this is not philosophy you're talking or things you've learned as a theology. This is your real experience. And that's why coming back and coming, speaking to the world is one of the most important things anyone can do. I mean, I know Suzanne feels that way. Suzanne, you want to jump in?
One of the things that really stood out for me was your omniscience and omnipresence as you transcended into the higher realm. And I feel like that's an important message. And one of the things that you may be trying to convey about the conditions of the world today is that, for one, consciousness transcends, love transcends. And as such, there's a oneness. And so when we hold the higher vibration of love, light, healing, with an intention to transcend the suffering, and we don't buy into the lower frequency of the fear and the control and the power, that we spread that across this shared field of a collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then in that way, we step into this omniscient consciousness, right? Where we're trying to hold that higher vibration that transcends the suffering of all, since we are so intricately interconnected in this field of collective consciousness.
Mm. Yes. Yes. You surmised it very well. 100%. Thank you.
So where I want to go with all this is that, yeah, there's wars and awful things happening, and there seems to be a shift in the field of consciousness. More people are open to what you're saying, Anita, and what lots of people in the human potential movement. And then there's this other thing we've talked about just before on the phone, that there seems to be a break in the worldviews about are we alone in the universe and not, and the government's coming forward and there's cracks inside that secrecy. And you had some really important things to say, I feel, about this extraterrestrial existence. It might be interdimensional. So do you want to share some of the things you talked about before?
Sure. So first of all, I absolutely believe there is life beyond this earth. I would be sadly disappointed if we were the most evolved form of life in the universe. I mean, we still have a long way to go. So there is absolutely life. And then the ones that seem to break through and kind of appear for us, like the ones that people, of course, have had sightings of, not only of UFOs, UAPs, but also of extraterrestrials. I think they are already here. I think they live among us, but they're trying not to scare us. They are of the same belief that they don't want to spread the fear. This is what I feel. Again, I want to say I'm not an ET expert or a ufologist or UFO expert, but I do know how consciousness works because I was there. And so I believe that if extraterrestrials are able to appear before us, which they have, UFOs have appeared and people have reported sightings, the fact that they can be here means they are extremely evolved, far more evolved than the human race. And I do believe that they're here to help us in our evolution. And but at the same time, they're very sensitive to the fact that they don't want to appear too fast and they don't want to appear in front of the wrong people, because again, they would just be spreading the fear, which is what we don't want to do. And I also believe that we as a race, humans, kind of have things a little bit upside down or the wrong way around. And when I say I understand how consciousness works, consciousness is always growth oriented, healing oriented. Consciousness is not competitive. Consciousness is more unifying oriented. It's peace, love oriented. It's very much flows in tandem with nature. It's very much in terms of what is nature is growth oriented. So that's what consciousness does. And humans, though, in competitiveness, in trying to hold on to power, we actually work against consciousness when we do that. Mm. We work against consciousness when we develop technology to go into war, to fight with other nations. But if we were working on technology to bring peace and to feed the planet, consciousness would work with us and in our favor. So would extraterrestrials, so would life from, you know, whatever evolved life from other planets. They would work with us to make it happen faster and faster. Mm. So back to what I was saying, when I was in the other realm, I was immersed in full consciousness. And in that full consciousness state, I was immersed in that. I knew that from that state, my body would heal because consciousness goes towards that. But when we're in the physical and you're dealing with what doctors have told you is a terminal illness that you have to battle against and you have to fight it and you're in this place of fear, what people don't realize is you're working against consciousness. So even our medical system, again, controversy alert here, but even our medical system goes against consciousness. If we learned a system of healing that went with consciousness, we would have the answers to things like healing cancers and other chronic diseases. We would attain those so much faster if we worked with consciousness rather than against consciousness. And I think ETs are here to help us to work with consciousness. And if we want to develop faster as a race, it's not about going outward and developing technology to compete with other countries, but it's about going inward and becoming a more conscious, aware species and the technology will come to us. The inspiration to develop far more advanced technologies will come to us.
Well, the other thing I want to ask you about that is because we've talked about this before, and I appreciate, you know, addressing the subject because it is a little out of your field. But you said when you're in that other place, you caught glimpses, I think, of like other realities and maybe other forms of being. Can you maybe go back and talk about what you saw and how those interact with human beings, in a sense?
So I was aware that I was surrounded by beings, many of whom I didn't recognize. And I just felt they were my guides. But from the perspective, but however, I have no way of knowing or being sure whether I know that they continue to exist right now. So first of all, scrap what I said about I have no way of knowing. I do know that they exist and are helping me. But what I meant is I have no way of knowing whether these guides are what appear to us as ET. That's what I wanted to say, is that they are guides on the other side. Our spiritual guides could well be could well appear to us in the form of extraterrestrials. They could well, they are so advanced, is what I'm trying to say, is that because when we cross over, what greets us is what brings us comfort. So if you are a strong advocate of Jesus, for example, and you will feel comforted by seeing Jesus, that's who will greet you. But if you are somebody who really believes in believed and followed Kuan Yin or Buddha, that's who will greet you. If you are somebody who painfully misses a parent who passed away, that's who will greet you. And so even ETs and even our deceased loved ones and even our guides who appear to us while we're in the physical and while we're alive, people say they saw glimpses of their spirit guides. Maybe even they appear as extraterrestrials, because extraterrestrials, or if somebody is going to travel from another dimension and from another world, millions of light years away, if they have the technology to come here, they certainly have the technology to appear in whatever form that brings us comfort. Mm-hmm. And they certainly have, you know, the technology to leave their physical bodies and come back into their physical bodies. There's so much that we still don't understand.
But are you saying that who we see on the other side is sort of a projection of our own belief systems, or are we pulling that energy to us because we're aligned with it? I'm not sure what you mean.
It's the latter. We're pulling that energy towards us. So what I'm not saying is that they are figments of our imagination. There are guides. We are surrounded by beings all the time, trying to guide us, trying to help us. But the problem with most of us is that we don't tune in. We don't listen. We don't believe it when we hear. We dismiss it. We tend to listen to the noise and the fear-based messages of this external world, as opposed to the comforting messages and the guidance that is connected to our internal world.
Right. Thank you. Suzanne, you
have my conference. Yeah. I make a distinction. First of all, there's the oneness, but the distinction between the extraterrestrials and the ultra celestials. And I find that fascinating. And part of my inspiration for that is my dear friend, Dr. J.J. Hertog, and his books that outline how there are sort of these heavenly, angelic, ultra-celestial beings that are maybe in the higher heavens who can greet us on the other side. And very possibly, of course, our past loved ones and, you know, maybe some of these ascended masters like, you know, Lord Sananda as Master Jesus, you know, appearing before us, who could very well be extraterrestrial in nature. But I just find it interesting to explore what the difference may be between extraterrestrial races who would be incarnated on other planetary spheres and sort of these ultra celestial beings that may be more angelic or heavenly in these higher, more spiritual planes.
Yeah. Does that make sense, Anita?
Yes, it does. It does. And so what's interesting is that when you're in the state of pure consciousness, the distinctions are less clear. And I feel that all of this is true. Everything you said is spot on, and what J.J. Hertak speaks of as well. And it helps us to understand. It helps us because we, as even as consciousness, every single soul is part of consciousness. And every soul is on their own evolution. So we're on our own evolution. We're on our own path. And so you have celestial beings that are from other more advanced worlds, more advanced masters, of course, like Sananda, Buddha, and so on. And then there are those who, I guess, are the ones who are still at the level of desiring power at all costs, even if it harms the planet. So we do have all these different levels, but when you are not, but these levels are more distinct when we are here manifest in the physical. When consciousness manifests as physical, these levels become more obvious and distinct. And we here, evolved beings like yourselves, want to understand it. And so we see it as levels and hierarchical. But when we are in the state of pure consciousness, nobody can harm us. And so in that state, we don't quite see the levels in the same way. There's no real hierarchy. There's no wars in that state. But every soul is kind of at a different level of their growth. And it's only when they manifest in the physical do you really see where they are on their evolution. That's when, so it's consciousness made manifest in the physical that really tells you, oh my gosh, this person is still where they need to compete and they need to fight and they need to kill and they need to hold on to their power. They can't see, they don't remember that consciousness, if we act from a place of consciousness, all these things will be made manifest because consciousness is very growth inducing. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think that's also why people incarnate, to see where they are in consciousness, right? So
yeah,
you came back, you didn't have to incarnate, but to see where you were in consciousness and also help somehow shift the consciousness to what's possible.
And, yes, I wanted to see what I could do with the information that I had just learned on the other side. I wanted to see that, okay, now that I know this, let's see if I can apply this, because I realized we all know it when we're on the other side, but why is it so hard to apply it when we're here? And it's because we're dealing with different people at different levels of consciousness.
Right, right. No, that's true.
I don't think there's like an ego survival instinct that comes into play once you're physically incarnated in a body that requires food, shelter, you know, and then it feels like that sort of gets inflated into nicer shelter, better food, you know what I mean? And then that's maybe where like competitiveness comes in, but it feels like that's part of the physical manifestation of this ego personality that is sort of striving to survive. And then that can get, you know, inflated so that then it becomes a sense of superiority versus inferiority.
Yes, exactly. In fact, one of the things I speak about in one of my books, Sensitive is the New Strong, I speak about exactly that ego versus conscious awareness. And we all need an ego as well to survive, because if you have no ego, you tend not to be able to take care of yourself. And it's very hard to actually take care of yourself or to find a job. And, you know, if you are only pure consciousness and no ego, it's very hard to take care of yourself. But if you are only ego with no conscious awareness, then what happens is you basically become a narcissist. You basically are only about self and power at the cost, at the detriment of everyone else. So I speak about this in one of my books, where if you imagine that we're all born into this world with an equal amount of ego and conscious awareness. But what happens to some of us is that as we go through life, we dial up the ego and we dial down the conscious awareness. And this is what, and then if you see somebody that has low conscious awareness, zero conscious awareness, but 10 ego, then they are the ones who we're seeing the loudest voices among us, the ones who are power hungry, and they are destroying the planet, and all they think of is their own advancement and not the advancement of the human race or the human species as a whole. And so that is like a 10 ego and a zero conscious awareness. But on the other hand, if you have a 10 conscious awareness and a zero ego, what you have is somebody who becomes a martyr and a doormat, who is constantly at the service of other people, but they don't take care of themselves. And so they aren't able to hold on to any money, because they'll give it to everybody who's less well off than them. So they become poor, they become destitute, they become healthy when unhealthy. When they're unhealthy, they can't take care of themselves because there's always someone else to help. So that is a 10 conscious awareness, because conscious awareness means being aware of everything that's outside of yourself. What you want is a healthy ego and a healthy conscious awareness, so that right. you can take care of yourself and you can be healthy, happy, and enjoy. And you can use that energy and resources to take care of everyone else and the planet. So that's kind of the balance between.
You're saying, in the sense that the ego personality is a container for consciousness, just like your body's a container. So you need a healthy body and a healthy sense of this relationship to the vastness as a fractal of that.
You need a healthy sense of self and a healthy sense of other, of conscious awareness and the world around us.
Right. And let the ego, in a sense, take a back seat to consciousness, but don't throw the ego out of the car.
Exactly. So it's basically a healthy ego, but it's not being egotistical. There's a right. difference between having a healthy ego and being egotistical. And if you had no ego, like zero ego, you wouldn't even be able to be out there sharing your message or having a platform or any of those things. You would right. believe that everybody else is more important than you are. So you need a level of ego even to be sharing, even if it's a loving message, even if it's a message of peace and hope and kindness, even if it's John Lennon's message of Imagine, you need an ego to be up there singing that song and telling people, I want peace in the world.
Yeah.
If you had no ego, you wouldn't be up there sharing yourself.
Right. So it's a strange balance being here on the... Because we're only taught that one side: develop your ego, become somebody, be important, you know, get people's attention or power or money or whatever it is. But
it feels to me like what we're talking about is self-worth, right? It's like, am I worthy? And once you have that shift into I am worthy, then others see you as more worthy, with something to contribute or something of value. You see others having worth and value. And I noticed in your talk that you gave in Sedona 10 years ago, that was a huge part of why you actually became sick in the first place, was because you lacked the self-worth. And so I think that's a big part of what we're talking about here.
That's a huge part. Like for me, I grew up in a culture with tremendous gender disparity. And I always felt I lacked worth just for being a woman because men were valued way more than women in my culture. And a woman's worth was measured by how valuable she was to the men in her community. So our job was constantly to serve men so that our value could, we believed that we would be increasing our value the more desirable we were to the men in our community. So that was very demeaning. The other tremendous imbalance that I have noticed in many cultures, including the culture I grew up in, is that, you know, what we were just talking about the ego and the conscious awareness, for example, what you see out in the world is people, you know, the people who hold positions of power, are people who have massive egos and no conscious awareness. So they're way off balance. So they're living way in their ego with no conscious awareness, and they hold the power in the world, and they are the loudest voices, and they're the ones creating the wars and the fear and the games and so on. But then on the other side of the coin, you have all these people that want to do good in the world. And so they go to spiritual teachings, and this is me when I was growing up, and you go to traditional conventional spiritual teachings that teach you that the ego is bad, that to love yourself is selfish, and you always, and it's better to give than to receive. And so what ends up happening is that you deplete your own ego to the point where you're not even out there. Like, I depleted my ego and depleted my self-worth because I thought it was egotistical to take care of my needs. I did that to the point where I became a doormat and I became invisible. So you create this imbalance where the people who want to spread goodness are being fed messages that they have to make themselves small. They have to be meek. They have to serve. They have to be martyrs. While on the other side, and so you're basically softening their voices more and more, and you're silencing them. And on the other side, the voices that are getting louder and louder are the controlling, egotistical voices that are taking over the world.
Right. That's why your book title, Dying to Be Me, is so perfect, because you did die to become yourself. Unfortunately, people don't learn that. And what will change? How do we bring the self-worth? Because everyone, men and women, also have that. Yes. They're not good enough. So what is there a key to developing that?
Well, first of all, you have to realize that it is not selfish to love yourself. In fact, it's more selfish not to love yourself, because when you don't love yourself, you don't take care of yourself. When you don't take care of yourself, then you not only can you not be a light for the world, but other people end up having to take care of you. When you don't love yourself. So when I crossed over, one of the things I realized is that every single one of us is a facet of God. You see, I grew up in a particular kind of spirituality that made me feel, as I said, as though I had to be a martyr and a doormat, and I had to be of service and to others, and I had to serve men and so on. So I learned to see God in everybody else's eyes and to be of service to everybody around me. When I died, I realized I had never learned to see God in my own eyes. And so when I realized that I too am an expression of God, I realized that to repress myself and to not see value in myself means to deny God from expressing itself through me. And who am I to deny God anything? Right. So even I am an expression of God, and that's how I would like people to view themselves.
Beautiful. No, I think what you're teaching and what you've learned because of this is not philosophy. This is experience, is what makes your message different. And you know, I just want to ask something, going back to that other subject about the ETs. Linda Moulton Howe is going to be appearing at the conference, says that there's something that the ETs are fascinated with, at least the people she's met, at the moment of death, and that how we are vessels, we are containers of the soul, and some of these ETs are interested in being containers or having access to the soul, and don't know what to make with this soul essence that are a part of human beings. Does any of that make sense to you about that? Wait.
Oops, your volume.
We lost you. Okay.
It feels like you're talking about multidimensionality in a way, Alan, just to address that. Like if the soul is dispersed, you know, throughout these different dimensions and expressing as an extraterrestrial on another planetary sphere in some other dimension, and then expressing here, because one of Linda's videos was about, is your soul as an avatar here connected to another, you know, extraterrestrial who's an avatar there? And does that implicate, you know, this idea of multidimensionality? And I'm curious, like, okay, if we're physically incarnated on different planetary spheres as multidimensional beings, are we also experiencing as spiritual beings are in a spiritual plane?
That's one part of it. The other part is there's something about the human soul that some ET races seem to be very fascinated with. So any answer to any of that, Anita?
So I know Linda Moulton Howe is an expert in this field. So I don't want to step on anything that she says because she knows a lot better than I do on that subject. So I can only take it from where my understanding is more on consciousness, the consciousness level. And the only thing I can think of around this is that ETs are probably fascinated with our evolution, despite having access to full consciousness. What is it that makes us come here and fall prey to that which actually sets us back or sets this planet Earth back on our evolution? And I don't know if I'm going off on a completely different tangent.
I'm looking forward to a fascinating discussion you and Linda will have at the Sedona retreats about that. No, I don't think you're going off. I think nobody really knows, including Linda, who's researched this for 40 years, what the nature of their consciousness is like. So we can say it's all consciousness and there's frequencies of consciousness that I think we're just starting to embrace. And this goes back to the multidimensional part that you mentioned, Suzanne, is that when you see ourselves as multidimensional, there's a access to levels of consciousness that don't exist on just the pure human ego level. Does that?
And don't you think that it partially, Alan, the reason that extraterrestrial races are fascinated by us is because they are our star ancestors, right? If we really believe that our planet, like the Urantia book talks about, our planet is a life experimentation lab seeded by these different star races and their DNA. And of course, we know throughout history, the hybridization or the interbreeding, that, you know, part of the reason they're so involved with us is because they had something to do with upgrading us they are our star ancestors, more evolved, but almost like parents in a way, you know, sort of overseeing the evolvement.
Does that make sense, Anita, or is
that... It does. In a way, it's like they are our guardian angels. I definitely do see that. I do see them as helping us, guiding us, and overseeing us. I definitely see that. And I also think that For all we know, I don't know, because again, time was also different in the other realm. Time was not linear. When we're outside of our bodies, time is not linear. And sometimes I even wonder if the beings that come here that make themselves visible, are they even our future selves coming back to kind of help us, to guide us on our path? It could well be.
Some people say that. Some people, and I think it's great because you are an expert in your field, like I said, of near death. And there seems to be more people speaking out about this. There's more people having visitations of these beings. So, and there's still war. I think I asked this in the beginning of the show, but do you sense a shift on the planet for something new and different?
100%. I do. I'm actually very optimistic about an upcoming shift. I think that there are more and more people who are tired of the status quo. They're tired of the powers that be. The reason why it feels worse is because the powers that be are holding on tighter to fight against what is coming up for them. And that's why it sometimes feels worse. It's because they're fighting back harder. But more and more people are becoming aware and consciously aware, and more people want this shift and want this change. So we just have to ride out this period of time. And in fact, this is the reason, this is what inspired me to write the book, Sensitive is the New Strong, because right now, the loudest voices among us are the ones who are the people who are less consciously aware. They're the ones who are the leaders in our world, and they are the loudest voices, which is why the world feels so challenging. But if the more consciously aware among us, the more sensitive people, the more compassionate people among us, if they were to start to become the louder voices, we could actually see that shift very, very quickly. Because unfortunately, most people who are consciously aware, who are more sensitive, who are more empathic, they tend to also be more introverted, more shy, more frightened of speaking out. Right. But we actually need these people to speak out more and start to become the louder voices and start to take on positions of power. They shy away from power, which opens up the positions of power for the ones who actually are not consciously aware.
You know what, Alan? The other day you said something that really struck me, and I've been thinking about it for the last couple of days. Okay. And what you were saying is that maybe we have to get pushed to a certain point where we may have been more complacent, or we may have been more compliant, but then suddenly we're pushed to the edge where we finally say enough. And if we think about it in our own lives, like I am kind of a pushover and I'm really non-confrontational and I'll put up. And then all of a sudden I'll say enough, you know, and then I'll stand in my power and I'll do something about it. And my voice, you know, may become louder and I may look for a solution that serves the highest good for all. But I think that, you know, this may be relevant to this conversation. And I really look forward to reading your book, Sensitive is a New Strong, because I really feel like that could be a backlash of what these people in power with their wars and with, you know, COVID and this, you know, it's making people rise up to say enough is enough. Yes. And now we're going to stand in our own power and we're going to declare our sovereignty and we're going to create heaven on earth.
Exactly.
Well, it goes back to what Bashar Darolanka, who's also be at the Sedona conference, says. This is as dense as it gets, this earth vibration. And so get as much density as you can, because we are shifting gears. We are going to the next level. And so I think there is a kind of, the forces are becoming more intense because they can't stop the rise of consciousness. This is,
yes.
And they want to hold on to their jobs, which is power and greed. And there's, it seems like it is happening, or I hope it's not just like positive thinking, that there really is a vibration. You feel it, right, Anita, the vibrational? Tell us what you feel as far as that, like in vibrational fields, like how you feel it in your body.
I feel that there's a big shift because I feel there are more and more people who are waking up and into this stuff. And if I were to give you, so I feel it energetically, first of all, I feel things in my body. I feel things energetically. I feel shifts. But if I were to put it tangibly as an example, is that a lot of organizations that are, let me take it to health and healing then. In that area, I can give you a tangible example. Previously, when people used to do or have clinics and things that were not mainstream, they were complementary offerings, most people would consider that to be quackery. I'm going back 10 right, years, 15 right. years, most people thought that it was quackery. And these people, these practitioners had to operate under the radar because they didn't want to get themselves into trouble. They would have to operate under the radar and word about them would be, it would just be word of mouth. Today, I see so many places, so many clinics and healing centers and that are not medical, like just so many of them, and they're burgeoning. They're like full. They just can't cope with the number of people that are going into them. And it's very, very different. There's still a whole faction of people that are pushing back and trying to say that's not FDA approved. And so an insurance won't cover it. So people are still forced to go the medical route. But those types of clinics and venues that are not mainstream, that are complementary, they are growing and they are getting more customers and clients because mainstream is not working for them. People are getting tired of mainstream everything. So I'm just seeing the other side. I'm actually seeing the growth in terms of, again, not just in medicine, but also in spirituality. There's so much growth in more unified kind of spirituality as opposed to the divisiveness of religion. Less people are supporting that. And I'm seeing it in every faction of life.
Yeah. And I think that's why a conference like the Sedona Center and Retreats is so important, because it brings community together. I mean, there's the fantastic speakers like you and Linda and Matt Kahn. Do you know Matt Kahn's work?
Yeah, I do. I do. I know him personally as
well. Oh, he's a great guy. And of course, JJ and Desiree and William Henry and who else? Daryl. Have you ever met Daryl Anka Bashar?
I know who he is and I know his work, but I've not met him.
Oh, you're going to love him too. And all these people are presenting a perspective on reality and about this ascension, or what I call the raising of vibration, that is becoming more accepted. And we need meetings like what Suzanne's put together. So as a community, we can compare notes with each other. That's what I like to bring out at these conferences as an MC and say, well, who's experienced this increase in the body, in their vibrational body? And it's going to be in Sedona, Arizona, which already, you spent time there, right?
Yeah, I've been there several times. I've done a couple of retreats there. I love Sedona and I love these type of events. And I've always enjoyed what you put out, Alan. And I'm looking forward to meeting and getting to know Suzanne. And Suzanne, thank you so much for taking care of all the, you know, all the logistics for us. And so I'm like really looking forward to it. I'm so excited about the event.
Oh, good. Maybe have you been out on the land, Suzanne? Maybe you could take Anita and Danny out to some of the vortex. Have you been out there to the desert, Anita, a bit?
A little bit. I've been to one of the vortexes, the closest one. I forget what it's called.
Well, Suzanne, could you arrange that for Anita and Danny, you think?
Sure. We have, during our event, these sacred vortex site journeys. And so we have on the day before the event, well, it's the morning before the event starts. So our event starts at 2 o'clock on Friday, and at 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. on Friday, there's a tour going out that people can sign up for. And the shuttle buses take them to different vortex sites in Sedona. We're also doing that on Monday after the event from 8:30 to 11:30. And of course, any of the speakers are welcome to join those groups going out. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to come in a day early then.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
You know, and people are drawn to these sites like Sedona, like Glastonbury, because there is an energy there that's amplifying the total grit of the earth, I feel. So,
yes.
I mean, I know we don't want to keep you too long. I know you have a bunch of things coming up. Well, do you have any things you want to leave people with in this broadcast about what's possible for them and the planet and human civilization?
So I would just like people to know that to stay optimistic, don't buy into the fear. The best thing that you can do for everybody around you is to spread light, joy, not fear. If you are feeling fear yourself, honor it, acknowledge it, and allow it to pass through you. Do what you can to spread joy and kindness and compassion. And also, if we get together in groups and we actually raise our energy together for the whole planet, that helps. It really does help. So if you can organize, if you really want to help what's going on in the world, gather groups of people together and come together in meditation or prayer or just raising conscious energy and conscious vibe.
This is one of the things Lynn McTaggart is doing. And Lynn is, do you know Lynn's work, right?
Yes, actually, I know her well.
Actually, I'm just going to show people that you're actually going to be with Lynn in San Diego a couple of months before the retreat. This is called TCCHE in San Diego. And this is one of the places there. That's a great picture of you there with Lynn and Bruce, of course, our favorites, and JJ and Desiree Hertog. I'll be there. There might be more, but the Sedona retreat, I think, really has some, I mean, this is a great retreat, but also what's happening in Sedona that Suzanne's put together, I feel builds an intensity that, you know, really, let me pull up that flyer, which really helps people, because of the workshop, motivate to make changes in their lives. So let me just show that here. And Suzanne, anything you want to say about what's coming up here?
Well, thank you for highlighting the workshops, because Anita is also offering a workshop, as are you. And many of our presenters are offering these interactive workshops, which allow the attendees to really engage with the presenters, which you don't get a chance to do at large conferences when there's, you know, 700 people in the auditorium. But these breakout groups, and we're having over 12 conferences over the course of 2 days workshops. And in these smaller rooms, people really get to connect with the presenters and ask questions. And, you know, that's what I really like about it.
Oh, and also, Anita, you might not know, there's a bunch of people talking about NDAs on this conference. Who are they again, Suzanne?
Yeah, so the near-death experiencers would be Mark Anthony. Rob Gentile really just came out recently about his near-death experience, and the way that he shares about it is really profound and prolific. And then, of course, Suzanne Giesman is connecting with her past stepdaughter who transitioned. And so, yeah, and we're, you know, the Her Talks talk about ultra celestials. So we have this panel hosted by Alan on Saturday night that is going to be you and then some of these other near-death experiencers. Of course, Linda Moulton Howe and the Her Talks. So that'll be really fun too.
I am so looking forward to it.
Oh, great. I'm so happy you're going to be there. You and Danny. Don't leave Danny at home. And,
he's excited about it. He loves UFO. He loves the UFO phenomenon, anything related to it.
Are we going to have a little VIP gathering for some of the speakers too, Suzanne?
I'm looking into arranging that, and that would probably be like a brunch on Friday before things get started at 2:00. So yeah,
great.
Thank you for inspiring that, and I'll dive in to see what the logistics are.
Because you're all such leaders because of your own experience in this field, it's nice to kind of get you together to know each other, like Matt Kahn, I just think is fantastic. And everyone's giving their whole self to raise the frequency of this planet. It's just nice to have a lot of people in the same room with that high intention.
Just being there amongst all the people, that in itself will uplift whoever comes.
Yes.
Us. And I mean, that's why I'm excited to go. That's why I love these events, because even just being there, it just feels amazing.
Yeah. So you have these conferences coming up. Anything else you want to talk about before we say goodbye, Anita? Anything like books? Television shows.
I'm working on things all the time. I'm doing a live video today on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Oh. So join me later in about an hour or two. But
where do we go to join you? What's the link?
So just go to my YouTube channel. Anita Murjani Official YouTube channel. And I will be live there. So join me on my YouTube. I have YouTube videos every week. I would love for people to just come and follow me on YouTube and social media, or check out my books, or just attend this event, the Sedona Ascension Retreat. I would love to see people at that event. I love physical live events because I like being in a room full of people who are like-minded and of the same vibe.
Right. And, you know, I just want to say, Anita, I noticed like you are so much more grounded and focused and direct. And it's not just like you're relying on the experience that you had, but you seem to be integrating it in an evolutionary way. So does that make sense? Like,
thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I really feel it. And there's so much more confidence and, you know what you know, and you're open to what you don't know, but there's a place where you're able to ground this message for the future in that experience and take it further. You're not just relying on that experience, but that's why I feel there's this integration that's really solid there.
I love hearing that. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
I said to Alan after reading your book that it's less about what happened on the other side, and it's more about how you can make the most of your life on this side.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for saying that. And that's my mission. My mission is to actually help as many people as I can. And to actually create a shift in people, a shift in the way they view their lives and the world. And I want to help people to see through the fear that has been conditioned into us. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love the sign behind you, be kind. And I'll ask Danny, what kind should we be? No, I'm but no, thanks for you.
Danny, thanks for something here.
Danny's always welcome to jump in. I know he's but anyway, I look forward to seeing you in San Diego and everywhere. And thank you, Suzanne, and everyone watching. Subscribe to this channel, take out a super chat, and go to Anita's channel. And what's your channel, Suzanne? What's your YouTube channel?
SciSpy. SCI-SPI is my YouTube channel. It's Merging Science and Spirituality, oh, my genre is sci-fi. And plus I have all these videos on the homepage of the website.
Right. Well, thank you, Sedona Ascension Retreats. Go there, sign up, join us. It's going to be a real lot of fun with really some of the just people I really like, you know, and special people. So thanks again, Anita.
Lots thank you, Anita. Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, bless everyone. You. Okay. There she is, Anita Morjani. Okay. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.